seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
And you're very welcome to Golf Weekly. Okay, let me set the scene. I'm sure most of you are familiar, but at around 10 p.m. Irish time on Sunday evening, just as Shane Lowry was halfway through, or not quite halfway, but in the middle section of negotiating the infamous bear trap at PGA National in Palm Gardens, Florida, he's standing on the 16th tee. Data Golf put out a stat that said that Lowry had a 96.7% chance of winning from that moment on, with just 17 to finish the bear trap, and then what was then going to be a relatively easy par 5 18th to go. But then, as we all know, this happened.
To get it out there.
On the buoy!
Uh-oh. Is that leaking to the right?
Like it at all.
That is no good at all.
Not even sure that covered any land, Dan.
This is the 7. And he hates it.
It's way right. Oh my goodness, 2 times in a row.
I'm obviously extremely disappointed. I had the tournament in my hands and I threw it away. What more can I say? It's twice this year now so far, so I'm getting good at it. But yeah, look, what can I say? Like, I played unbelievable all day, and then one bad shot in 16 and completely threw me for the last 3 holes. It's never happened to me before. I said to Darren, I said, how do I feel like this now when I went through what I did in last September in Bethpage? You know, I got through that fine, and then, you know, I just felt like it was weird out there. I just really, yeah, just couldn't feel a club face in the last 3 holes. Then after my tee shot on 16, it was strange. But, you know, what can I say? It's very, very disappointing. Jeez, like, this is going to be hard to take, yeah. I have a tee time next Thursday in Bay Hill, and I have no choice but to move on. The hardest thing about today is I've never won in front of my 4-year-old, and she was there waiting for me, and yeah, I only wanted it for her today. I didn't want it for her. I don't care about anything else. Like, I wanted it so bad. Just to see her little ginger head running out in the 18th green would have been the most special thing in the world. But I thought I had it. I thought I was going to win. I mean, I didn't get ahead of myself, but like, I felt so comfortable out there, and then, yeah, tried to get a lot out of my 3-iron now in 16. Yeah, and did the only thing I couldn't really do.
There's so much in that 2 minutes. And to help us unpick it all, Gary Murphy and Dave McIntyre. Lads, let's kick off. Given that, was it last year that Shane had a very disappointing finish and then made a point of not speaking to the media afterwards? I was in awe of his general demeanor to be able to even have that kind of reluctant smile, but a smile nonetheless, to be able to kind of say what he did, given what he must have been feeling. So all credit to him for that. Anyway, thoughts?
Are you talking to me first off?
Sure, why not?
Well, I have to jump in off here. Look, I'm really glad, Fionn, that that's where you started with this, because we all have an awful lot of love and respect for Shane Lowry. There are times in his career where we felt that maybe he hasn't acquitted himself off the golf course, or sometimes on the golf course, as well as we would like. But we've always said that's just who he is. He's so relatable, he's so down to earth. And yes, he's thrown a few F-bombs out, and he's given his caddy a dressing down, and he's kind of bitched about the cameras being in his face, and he has just been who he is off the golf course, on the golf course. And we have always known that deep down he's a wonderful guy, and that anybody who knows him will tell you that you will not meet a more personable, relatable, genuine bloke than Shane Lowry. And it's one of the many reasons why he is one of the most beloved sports stars of the last 50 years in this country. And I admired him so much for fronting up as he did in the aftermath of what happened to him on Sunday. And we have seen a lot of golfers over the years, and you've mentioned Shane in the past has done it. We know that infamously, probably the most talked about situation in that regard was Rory McIlroy after the US Open that he lost to Bryson. And he wasn't hanging around to speak to the cameras. And you could argue, well, that's a major. And he was in the midst of a major drought. I guarantee you that Shane Lowry felt every bit as devastated on Sunday night as Rory did after losing at Bethpage. For me, there's no differentiating between the two. Yes, one's a major, one's a regular PGA Tour event. But in terms of the context and what it meant to each of the two individuals, there's no way that Rory was more devastated than Shane. And it would have been so easy for Shane to sneak off to the car park and throw his clubs in the back of the car. And he's not far from his home there in Florida and just head off. And he didn't. And he stood there. And then he delivered an interview with such poise and maturity and genuine sincerity. Talked about his family and his daughter and acknowledging that this is a major problem now. And very few golfers would actually do that. He talked about his inability to feel the club face for the last three holes once he sprayed that one on 16. He said, I'm getting good at this, unfortunately. Good being throwing tournaments away. And all in all, if I had any more room for my increasing my level of respect for Shane Lowry, well, he's filled that room now on the back of how he reacted to that dreadfully disappointing 90 minutes on Sunday evening.
Gary, I mean, we're going to talk. I want to get into what he said, because I think I agree entirely with Dave. The poise with which he addressed the media, given the heartbreak he must have been, the shock that he must have been feeling, is something else. But what he said lots of very interesting things that perhaps offer clues into his golf game, his state of mind, etc., etc. But before any of that, I mean, golf is a very, very difficult game. As Bobby Jones said, it's a golf that's played on a 5-inch course, given that he was coasting like for 15 holes, he built up a nice tidy lead. Like, it didn't look like anybody was really going to threaten. Like, how do you account for what happened to him on 16?
It was obvious. It was heartbreaking to watch. I think we had a duty of care to talk about it afterwards, and fair play to him for it. It'll probably stand to him because he's been missing on a few things like that over the years, and it does bother me when players don't do it. I think the whole product is dependent on, our storyline is embraced essentially to start with because of his input after the round. So, I think the PGA Tour needs to be much tougher. I don't think you can cop out and not do it. And I think there's something good in doing it too, because you're all the time working on yourself. And I think it'll probably stand to him. In all forms of strife, it's always better to communicate. So him, having a bit of an expression afterwards will certainly help him. I was watching it and everything was going his way. He was getting the breaks that you need to win. And then he was playing some brilliant golf on top of that. The tee shot on 16 it's a particularly poor one for someone of his level. And it just shook him, and I think we've all been shook on a golf course, but
was it half a shank?
No, I don't think it. No. He just never made a swing. It's kind of one of those shots that, the water is not really in play.
Yeah.
It's one of those shots. It's that easy. It's nearly difficult. It's a bit like laying up on a par five and you kind of forget to dial in on, and I would say this to people all the time, when you're laying up on a par five, it doesn't matter what it's, it could be a 7 or 8 iron, just pretend you're hitting it out of flag. And historically, I'd been brutal at laying up because you just lose. You think, oh, this is too easy. And I think it was one of those.
Yeah.
But the problem with it was...
Was it carelessness as opposed to pressure? Because...
I think it was.
15th, like, he played the 15th with ice in his veins. A wonderful shot into the green, drained the putt, little fist bump. It's highly unlikely that the pressure of the lead and the tournament at his mercy got to him between the 15th green and the 16th tee box.
Well, the hardest shot he had coming in was probably 15.
Yeah.
And he was so assured, he was so dialed in, and he wasn't with the tee shot on 16, and he definitely wasn't with the tee shot on 17.
But the tee shot on 17 is pressure, isn't it?
Yeah, and
on 16, he's just messed it up.
Even his layup looked a bit ropey because the problem with it, he hit it in the water there. You know, you have to lay it up again.
Yeah, so his layup looked dodgy. And then did he have 7-iron in and he pulled the 7? Now, obviously, if you've hit one out to the right.
His layup, to me, it looked edgy and toey and, you know, and he was in a bit of a panic at that stage. And then he's compounded it because you can go anywhere there except, you know, potentially plug it in that bunker left. And he did that too. So he's really struggling. But then I thought, like, his bunker shot was so good.
Oh, phenomenal.
To take on the shot, to play it with the least amount of sand, to get the spin. It was so easy to leave that in the bunker or, you know, thin it 20, 30 foot past. And then he's taken triple. And to hit the bunker shot, he did. And hold the putt because, you know, it's a 3-footer and it's probably like a 7-footer going through what he was going through. I thought that would have settled him down, but he just never looked comfortable. He never looked comfortable on 17. I don't think he was in between clubs, you know, and if you are in between clubs, you hit a harder one and pull it. But he never got settled on the shot and it was a complete wipe.
But Gary,
he was just aiming a bit further left and just totally came out of it.
To go back to Dave's point, so he plays 15 really, really well.
I thought Thurman's over there.
Yeah, you know, that's the hardest of the tee shots on the bear trap. Or I mean, look, it's the
harder of the two.
Of you the know, two,
17,
sorry.
17 is not an easy shot either.
No. But
Gary says there, is that not the key point here? Gary says, I thought the tournament was over there.
So we'll
did
talk
Shane
about
Larry
that.
Also think that.
So let's
did Shane Larry think he's mailed this putt, the lead is now 3, this tournament's over, and he's just totally tuned out.
Okay, so let's talk about that. We can get into that because that is like I have that in bold on my notes because, okay, let's contrast this. So on the 18th at Bethpage, Russell Henley sticks his approach to 10 feet. Now, I have no doubt that for someone like Shane Lowry, the idea that the entire European Ryder Cup team, the fate of that team is resting on his shoulders, weighed heavily on him. Like, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind. When Tiger Woods played Ryder Cup, he probably didn't feel that same. It didn't matter to him as much. I mean, winning mattered, but you know the point I'm trying to make. He then sticks it to 6 feet, okay? Now, under like phenomenal pressure. On his way up, he's talking to Darren about how much winning means. Every single sports psychologist will tell you, stick to process. Do not play outcome sport. Do not play outcome-based sport. Stick to process-based and the outcomes will happen. Is Shane Lowry guilty of playing in both instances, one that worked out unbelievably well and one that didn't, but he's playing outcome-based thing? He's engaged. He's given himself completely to outcome-based thinking.
Well, he did it at Port Rush as well.
And he did it
he
at Port Rush.
He talked in the aftermath how about he was he couldn't get images of the claret jug in his hands out of his head as he went down the back nine around Port Rush, and it didn't upset him there either.
No, but so
yeah, I think the reality of this, he has to learn from it and move on. You know, his next couple of tournaments are key, really, because. You know, I know it's easy for me to say, but he literally has the world at his feet. And in a career, he's one of the few guys that's had a long career. These things are just going to happen. It's just a fact of life that he's going to mess up. The only golfer that we've never seen mess up of this generation is Tiger. Now, he hit bad shots and he lost tournaments, not very often, but he never emotionally, you know, let himself go. And, you know, that's why he's been the greatest player of the last 30, 40 years. Scotty Scheffler seems to have a little bit of that in him, but nobody else, you know. So everyone is, you know, and the year of 2025 was Tommy Fleetwood messing up and eventually he got over the line. So it does happen. It's just a manner in which, like, back-to-back doubles is not something you would associate, but it does happen. So he's got to move on from this. He's got to learn from it first and foremost. I think he has to be very honest with himself too.
But can I go back? Sorry, not to be a pedant, but to go back to my original question. And yes, Dave, you used the example of Portrush. Shane seems, and it works for him, but it also doesn't work for him. It has worked for him, but, like, for example, you know, at this year's Dubai Invitational, he had a one-stroke lead in the final tee. Now, he thought par would be plenty. Then pulls a nine, hits a kind of heavy-handed bunker shot. And then natural Vera birdied behind just to kind of take it out, any doubt. Shane hasn't won a tournament on his own since 2022. He hasn't won a PGA ranking event for, this is coming on 7 years since the Open Championship. Shane is an extraordinarily good and gifted golfer. He should be winning more. Again, my question is this. Just judging on evidence of his own reveal, is he playing outcome-based thinking, or is he engaged in outcome-based thinking when all the smart money is telling you you can't be thinking about the outcomes, you have to just stick to the process?
I know, but it's easy for sports shrinks to say this. You know, it's like everything. It's, we all know what the right things are to do in life. Mm. And yet, as your human frailty prevents you all the time. It's easy for a guy sat in a room, you should. Well, like, the reality is he's on the 16th tee. If I'm in that position, I'm thinking I'm three ahead. The guy is chasing. So he's playing a completely different sport to what Shane is playing. He's going to birdie 18, so I'm two ahead. He might find one. If he does, I'm one ahead. I need a par here, and I need a par 17 and play 18 as a three-shotter and maybe hit a wedge close. There's no point going at the green in two per se, unless you see a leaderboard and something dramatic happens. So a three-shot lead in reality is not as much as it seems. Now, if you're thinking I got three shots and I need to par in and not make a mistake, well, then you're kind of behind the eight ball already. Mm. But he's got to hit. 16 is an easy tee shot, but it's a difficult second shot. So he's got to hit a good tee shot. I think perhaps he lost his way. He fell asleep on the tee. He had a dreadful shot, and then panic ensued.
Okay, so...
So is prevention better than the cure? Yes, it is. So maybe, you know, the mistake was his thought process. Why are you trying to get that much out of a three iron?
If you look at the graphic, you know, there's, I don't know how many hundreds of shots are hit on that over the 4 days. They're all, every one of them is finding fairway, except his is the lone white dot in the water.
Yeah, but it's the thing with the caddy too. Like, the caddies only really earn their cash in one or two moments, you know. And I'm not blaming Darren on this, because the boom mics, we didn't get to hear enough. But this is when you're in a situation like that and you can't really think for yourself, you can sit down with all the shrinks in the world. The best man on your bag is the guy, the best man for you in that situation, the only man for you is the guy beside you. He didn't seem that in between clubs on 17, but you got to keep the message as clear and succinct as possible.
But he played three iron the first 3 days with no problem.
Yeah, but 16. Why is he trying to get too much out of it? You know, is he trying to get too much out of it because he doesn't want to leave himself? I don't know exactly what the clubbing was. Is he? He doesn't want to. It's a tough pin on 16. He doesn't want to leave himself in between too much on the second shot. So he's trying to force a three iron, which, let's say, it leaves a seven rather than trying to chip a six or whatever the case might be. But, you know, the message in his own head has to be. It has to be clear from the caddy, but it has to be clear in his own head. He's got to be over the ball going, you know, I'm just trying to hit it down off the bunker, down the left. The water's not really in play.
Yeah.
Now, you know, is he aiming a bit too far left? Maybe. He certainly was on 17. And he's just wiped. Like, it was a terrible shot. For a mid-iron player, he's probably top three or four on the PGA Tour for that kind of shot. And that will haunt him a little bit. But listen, you know, a long career is about overcoming these things. I think I'd love to see, listen, we're all big Shane Lowry fans. There's no denying that. He's a fantastic guy and he's one of the greatest players to ever leave this island. But it's a little skid in the road, and he's lucky he's got two huge events coming up. Yeah. But it's, listen, I lost the West of Ireland in 1995. I still haven't gotten over it. So, you know, these are big losses. And, you know, and it, when he said, oh, this is my second time this year too. So there's a bit of an irk there as well.
For sure.
But he's got to get his head down and get back at it.
Dave, taking everything Gary's saying, and like, absolutely. And I think we're all very, very disappointed. We're all fans of Shane Lowry. He is one of the greatest golfers to emerge from this island. All of these things are true. So let's just park those for a second, including the disappointment, and try and, I guess, from a perspective of trying to understand the why of it, rather than, like I was watching, and I think someone made the comment, it's a good thing Johnny Miller wasn't in the box, because Johnny Miller would have gone, he's just choked, and that was it. And he would have been absolutely unrelenting. Yep. Let me finish my point. But if, as Gary says, Dave, it wasn't a Hosel rocket on 16, is it slightly more concerning, not so much about the mechanics of the golf swing, but more about where his head is at? Like, I mean, to be making such, to make such a blatant error of, this isn't his rookie season. He's been around a long time.
Yeah, in hindsight, I think playing the 15th the way he played it was the worst thing that could have happened to him.
Go on, explain.
Because he played it with so much conviction and control, and for him, holding the putt was a bonus. I think if he doesn't hold that putt, or if he has to scramble for a par on 15, and the lead is 2, I think he goes to 16 still 100% clued in. I think his focus was diluted in a big way by that birdie dropping on 15. You could see the way he reacted to it. And I think, as Gary said earlier, he thought the tournament was done. I think Larry thought the tournament was done. And then he switched off. He's obviously made a bad decision if he's trying to squeeze too much out of a 3-iron. Like, just get that ball on the fairway. Whatever it is you have to do, you speak to your caddy, says, right, let's play error-free golf between now and the end. Going to concentrate 100% on this one shot. This shot is the most important shot of the tournament, this tee shot on 16. And then my approach shot will become the most important shot of the tournament.
Yeah,
and
as you say, John, he parred 15. He parred 15. He didn't birdie it. Yeah.
But he held a big putt, though, didn't he?
No, he went 20 feet left, though.
20 feet left, and then it was just nice, cozy up.
I must be confusing
the 13th. He held a big putt on 13.
Yeah, 13, he held a big putt.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so everything I've said for the last 2 minutes, you can just talk
about. Typical Man United fan talking shite, really.
You've rendered that point utterly meaningless.
But go on anyway. So, he negotiated the first of the difficult three holes very, very, very comfortably.
When he hits the bunker shot of his life on 16, like, he had
it was a superb
wide.
I mean, he shouldn't have gone in there in the first place, but whatever.
Yes, but the only way he was going to leave that within 5 or 6 feet was to land it in the rough. And the rough was only about a foot wide. It was an astonishing golf shot off a downhill lie with very little sand to operate. And even the way he had to plant his right foot was really awkward. It was an astonishingly good shot from one of the best short game golfers in the world.
On 18 was pretty unbelievable as well.
Yeah, I suppose you could argue the pressure was kind of...
It was just
a 1 in a million shot. Like, you know, he gave it a run for its money, but...
It was a good shot, though. No, I agree.
It was. I mean, 18 guys are thinking this as a chance. But my point about 16 is that I would have thought that he would have spoken with his caddy walking up the 16 going, yes, it's a double bogey. It's a serious blow, but we've gotten away with this here.
We have. Like, and even with the double, he had a one-shot lead. Now, we'll talk about Echeverria separately.
He walked onto the 17th tee.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he saw... There was a weight. I don't know if he saw Echeverria's tee shot on 17.
He did, yeah. He somebody.
He did. So he would have seen Echeverria absolutely escape death in golfing terms on the 17th tee.
And make the birdie. He's just sitting there going, ah, for the love of
Christ. But then to make the birdie, I think that's like... that's two or three different shakes of salt into what was a gaping wound at that stage, because he walks off 16 with that unbelievable up and down from the bunker. He's thinking, right, total cock up here. We've gotten away with it. Tournament's still in my hands. He stands on the tee. He watches Echavarri hit a pretty average shot in, flirts with the edge of the green, should have ended up the water. He's probably looking at double there, and Lowry is going to cruise home. He manages to get himself onto the green. He holds the putt. Lowry hasn't hit his tee shot yet. His mind is absolutely scrambled at that stage, and yeah, he says he couldn't feel the middle of the club for the rest of the round. So what happened between the 16th green and watching the guy in front of him do what he did on 17, I think totally scrambled Shane's mind. Mm-hmm.
I think
he was gone at that stage. I really do.
Gary, just a quick one on Echevarria's tee shot on 17. Like, surely to Christ, there's no way he's going pin hunting. He's aiming 20 feet left of that. And
the only thing to say about that shot was he had the perfect club in his hand. It's got up in the wind a bit, and it's obviously gone probably 5 yards right of where he was hoping to miss it. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's not going at that flag.
No.
But listen, he buried the putt, though. Like, that putt went in at speed. So he kind of saw his chance, and he took it. But, it's a tough loss. Like, there's no... Because he's such a good record around that place. He's the favourite going in. There's none of the big boys there.
He was the second highest ranked player after Ryan Gerrard in the field. Over the last 5 years, he has the best record on the golf course. Now, he was very unlucky in 2022. Seb Straka won, and because do you remember the rainstorm, and he was caught up on 17, and there was that massive downpour, and the momentum just went out. And anyway,
he couldn't when that storm came in.
Yeah.
The 18th hole was nearly unplayable.
That's it. So
and Seb Straka knocked it on him too. So he got unlucky there.
He did. But this is a course that he clearly likes, as Dave said earlier. This is close to his house. He likes the Bermuda. He likes it all. It suits his eye. So it's not. This is not a place that battles him. He generally does well around here.
Yeah, and well, it's the perfect week to take off.
Yeah.
With the schedule that is, but he doesn't, because obviously
he likes it.
He thinks he can win the tournament, and he had won the tournament, but...
Oh, Jesus, he didn't. I'm looking at the stats here as well. Just looking at, like, I know he said in the interview that we heard at the top that, you know, he was playing unbelievable up to that point. I mean, he was playing very, very well. Like, I was just looking at the stats, his putting. Now, his putting was just off the scale brilliant. He ended up third in strokes gained. And then I'm just looking, where did he fit? Yeah, and then he was relatively average everywhere else. I mean, nowhere, not alarming, not bad, just kind of middle of the bunch, you know, kind of...
I think the big thing, Fionn, was he's the favourite to win the tournament. He shoots 8-under on Saturday.
Yeah.
And I don't care what anyone says. It's just hard to back up 64.
No, and it's true.
He's 6-under for the day standing on for his round, standing on the 16th tee.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's an incredibly good, you know, if you par 16 and 17, birdie's the last, it's 64 or 65 to win. You know, so it's awesome golf.
But he was making some footage of putts, like, in fairness.
The reality is you have to hold.
Sorry, this I'm not taking
or four
away.
Extra putts to shoot those numbers.
For 72 minus 3, 4, whatever it is, for 68 holes, he was majestic. He was brilliant.
I think it's important to look forward, because he, for the last couple of seasons, has had really slow starts. He's always kind of used this tournament as a catalyst to get a bit of form going. He, 2 years ago in the Arnold Palmer, when Scheffler won, he had to get an invite into the tournament.
He's sponsored by MasterCard. So it was almost
And he finished second or third.
Yeah.
So it's a really, listen, it's an undoubted kick in the bollocks. There's no denying that. But it's a brilliant week. It's a kickstart to the Florida swing. He's gone back somewhere this week where he's done well. It's an elevated event. You know, you got to see the wood from the trees on this thing. He's playing some really good golf. As you said, he's putting well. I think when Shane puts well, he's there, thereabouts. When he puts middle of the park, he'll finish 20th. So I think
that's the formula for a very good career.
Yeah, so he has to take a lot from it and learn from it. You know, he fell asleep on the 16th tee. And then, like every golfer, he got in a bit of a panic for 20 minutes, and he's got to learn from that and move forward enjoy the opportunity.
Can I put it to you, Gary, that everything you're saying makes a heap of sense, but it's also flavored by we want this to be true about Shane.
The other side of it, if he's coming down the stretch this week, he's going to be playing against Rory or Scottie Scheffler or a top player. It's easier, not easier. I think for someone like Shane, it's maybe a bit easier to beat those guys. Well, I think he's got to learn. The point being, like Russell Henley hits it into 10 feet. It's match play. He hits it inside him. That's a different sport to what he was facing on Sunday. He's got to learn to, you know, embrace his status maybe a little bit more. Okay. And because that is his platform. And that's, you know, Shane's the kind of player that should be winning once a year, once every other year on the PGA Tour and, you know, nick a big event or nick a major. And hopefully he can win another one or two majors before his career is done.
But this makes certainly it more difficult the next time, Gary, doesn't it? Like the next time he's in this position, surely there's scar tissue now after Dubai and after...
Well, it depends how you look at it. Is it scar tissue or is it, Jesus, look what I did last Sunday on the 16th. I'm on the 16th tee in Vail. I'm not doing the same thing. You know, if you're doing the same thing, you're compounding the problem. Like he's an amazing golfer. He's got a little chink in his armor that he needs to fix. There's no denying that. But that doesn't mean he can't fix it. And like Tommy Fleetwood ends up throwing away, three tournaments last year, and then he wins the FedEx. So, you know, all these things are... Mm-hmm. there to be improved on. So I think it's glass half. It has to be glass half full. Undoubtedly, it probably tastes like piss at the moment, but that's just the way it is.
Let me ask you both this before we get on to the horrible speculation of what it means moving forward and predicting a future none of us can actually predict. Yeah. Shane is a feel player. He it's all feel with Shane. So when he feels the feel, he plays that amazing golf, but when he doesn't. So is there something in that, Gary? Is there something in the fact that because he's more, that like ultimately he's at the mercy of forces that perhaps a mechanics player, like a Scottie Scheffler who can just go back constantly go back to fundamentals, to basics, that like... Even allowing for the reality that, like, once you lose the sense of where the club face is, you're buggered. Like, no matter, but
not necessarily. I know what you're trying to say.
I'm asking you.
Yeah, but if Shane changes coach and goes to your man Blackburn, who's top of the pops at the moment, like that's just over.
I think Neil Manship is the perfect coach for Shane, but that's by the by. But like.
No, he is. There's no denying he is, because all you have to do is look at his career. He's had
sure.
But you know, if you had said to him walking off the 18 green in Baltrey, in 17 years' time you're going to be top 20 in the world and have had the career you had, he just wouldn't have believed it. So he's overachieved in a certain sense, but yet when you get to that level, you always want a bit more, and that's only human nature. But for him, no, it doesn't. It's inconceivable. There's no. It's like Rory McIlroy going to Pete Cowan. You know, Michael Bannon's Rory McIlroy's coach. Mm. Granted, Rory's going to mess up here and there and do all of that, but it's got to be about the body of work, not looking for a quick fix.
But Dave,
the quick fix is probably between his ears more so than anything else.
Well, I mean, it comes down to this, isn't it? But like, this is the part that I find confusing. If Shane has indeed overachieved from the kid who won at Baltrey all those years ago. But yet, we also talk about having his elite level short game, you know, top three in the PGA Tour.
Stats-wise, it's not, Fionn.
It's not elite level?
No, I don't think stats-wise, it's not. And I'm not saying that's where he needs to improve.
No, but my point is that we talk about Shane as being, like, so, because... Every conversation I have about Shane, whether in my own head or with anybody else, is flavored by lots of different things, but it's also flavored by the fact that he he doesn't win as much as he should, or that his talent suggests that he should. But like, am I then expecting more, or should I just be going, you know what, he's kind of hitting all the numbers, a guy, or he's actually hitting better than he should?
Well, Shane has never been a real genuine top 10 golfer in the world. He has been a guy who will win around the world, and he'll get into double figures in his career in terms of tour wins and international wins, and he's picked up his major and he's won his WGC and he's won his Irish Open. Like, he's ticked boxes that he could never have dreamt of ticking. Maybe we elevate him in our own minds as being still the golfer he was in 2019, or the golfer that he was when he was contending for the US Open in 2015. He's probably not in that bracket at the moment. Like, it's so hard to win.
Yeah.
I think he's a better player now than he was then, to be fair.
Okay.
But winning is probably even more difficult.
Totally, yeah.
Like, all, if you look at the quality of the golfers coming out of the collegiate system in the States in comparison to where they were a decade ago, they're ready to win when they come onto the PGA Tour. Like, it's unbelievably hard to get yourself into that winner circle. And that's why it's so important that when you put yourself in position that you take advantage of it, because they may not get another chance this season.
And that's the part that frightens me a little bit. And Gary, I take everything you're saying absolutely, you know, that it's about the real estate between the ears, it's about changing the mindset. Now, but like, and I'm going to pick the worst case scenario here, right? At the Abu Dhabi Championship in 2015, Martin Kaymer had a 10-shot lead.
Yeah.
He contrived to lose it. Now, he had a major in his pocket and he was the reigning players champion. This was a guy like world number one. He was unbelievable, he was. He hasn't won since. Now, horses for courses, and I realize that not everyone is the same, but I'm saying it can happen. It can happen. Things do happen, that like scar tissue happens. There's like, and it's not, you don't go back to neutral after a loss on Sunday, that the work to eliminate the scarring becomes harder. That's the thing that frightens me.
Yeah, life beats you down. You know, there's no, you know, you referenced there those collegiate kids coming out. So, you know, they're coming out of college. I just think they're fitter and stronger now. And I think that plays into a lot of it. But there's an excitement value to the whole journey that they're going on. You know, and if they come out and that gets reinforced, no different to Jacob Bridgman, you know, he's been reinforced. And it's easy and it's exciting and Jesus, I can do this. You can't compare that to, you know, a 17, 18-year veteran who's, you know, had loads of, you know, and this is why his career has been astonishing. His longevity has been amazing. You know, if Shane can nick another 3 or 4 years at the top level that he's at, you know, and he gets to 41 or 2 years of age, it's been a phenomenal career. Mm-hmm. It's just the sexy factor is we want guys winning all the time. You know, it's no different to some of our athletes who have done amazing stuff in recent times and they're finishing fourth in the Olympics and stuff like that. But it's the medal and it's the winning, and that's the tiny, tiny percentile in the difference. And I'm really excited for Shane Lowry. Like, if he can, you know, truthfully sit down and learn from last Sunday, like, no one has died. You know, he's got the world at his feet. It's, you know, considering the absolute nonsense that's going on the planet, it's an unbelievably hard loss, and he'll be seething and embarrassed and all of the above, but that's just part and parcel of life. But he's got to relish that, you know, he's got two huge events coming up and he's got a serious, genuine chance at Augusta, and that's what's in front of him.
Sorry, I was talking to somebody earlier in the week who said exactly that. He's a really good chance at Augusta. Do you genuinely believe that?
Of course he does. Well, why wouldn't he? His putting has improved. His putting was always a streaky putter. The pace in his stroke now, the pace on the ball, is completely different to what it was 4 or 5 years ago. And he even his putt on the first hole, you know, he obviously got a flyer. They misjudged the wind. That happens. He hits it long in the bunker. Terrible shot with a wedge on your opening hole. But that happens. But the way he rolled in that 12-footer for par, that's a huge arsenal to his game. So, you know, he's got to go up to Bay Hill this week and stick his chest out and get on with it and try getting that leaderboard as quick as he can. If he's licking his chops and feeling sorry for himself, he'll shoot 74, 75 and finish down the pack. But that's not where he should see himself, because he's not going to be the best player in the world, because no one else is at the moment, only Scotty. But there's nothing wrong with getting the seventh or eighth could be his number one, or fifth or sixth. Tommy Fleetwood is at three. That's probably his number one. Mm-hmm. You know, not everyone can be number one, but he's got so much in front of him. And he's got to move on from this and, you know, and fix a couple of things that need to be fixed.
So, what needs fixing, in your view?
But obviously, he struggles a little bit with favouritism. There's no denying that.
Go on, explain that a bit. What do you mean?
It's a different emotion when there's an expectation to do something rather than chasing something.
When he's a favourite, that when everyone expects him to do it, that he struggles a little bit with
realising. I think he does. And I think and it's always astonished me over the course of watching golf the last, 30-odd years, how the top players turn up and perform when the expectation is ferocious. They learn to deal with that emotion. And maybe that's the next, you know, something for Shane to get to the next level, because he's literally, you know, a couple of shots a week away from being a serious contender every week. So maybe that might be the tiny difference, because, you know, Tiger wins that tournament. Scotty Scheffler wins that tournament. Shane put himself in a position. He played the golf that they would play to get into that position. So that's the tiny percentile of difference that elevates players to different stratospheres.
Dave, do you share Gary's optimism?
Yeah, I think overall, the big picture is that he's in a good spot. He's played some very good golf this season. I do think what happened in Dubai and what happened at the weekend will make it more difficult for him to close it out the next time he's in that position. But I think we've said that about a lot of golfers over the years, and Gary's example of using Tommy Fleetwood just last season is an excellent one. Rory had so many narrow misses. You know, we've mentioned Pinehurst against Bryson and the fact that he should have won the US Open the year before at the Olympic Club and failed to do so, or was it the LA Country Club, failed to do it.
LA, yeah.
You know, he didn't manage to get it done at St. Andrews when he was too conservative, and Cam Smith ended up taking it off him at the Open. And even at multiple points in his final round at Augusta last year, looked like he was throwing it away with two double bogeys in the same bloody round of golf. But he came through, and Fleetwood came through, and they got it done in the end. And Shane Lowry is one of the four players in the world in 2026. So there are plenty of reasons for him to be positive. I think it's good that he's going to the Arnold Palmer this week and get himself straight back up onto the horse. It's only March, the first week in March. The whole canvas of the golfing year is still ahead of him.
Can I ask, on that subject, can I ask, you know, maybe just be devil's advocate for just a moment. I, like everybody, I was full of admiration for the way he spoke to the media. I like the fact that he said, look, I have a tee time next Thursday, and that's it. Also, the way the nature of golf these days, this is a signature event he's teeing it up in. He can't not play those signature events, particularly as going into next year, the parameters around golfing qualification are going to get narrower, more strict. So yep. In a sense, like, Shane really is in no position to take this week off regardless. Even though I absolutely respect the fact that he can embrace and go, yeah, this is what it is, I've got to go. This is my job, I got to go. It's like literally, I've had a shitty time today, but I got to get up for work tomorrow morning. That's just the way life is.
Yeah. Well, why would you want to take Arnold Palmer off anyway?
No,
you know what
wouldn't.
I mean? Unless you absolutely
No, I mean, he was in fairness, he was so unlucky. Like, to your point, Gary, like, he gets the sponsor's invite, and then that's the one he'd probably have like a little beef with Rory. Is like, why in the name of Christ did you tell Scotty Scheffler that he should move to the Spider when it was at Bay Hill that Scotty solved his putting woes? It was there that Scotty went, oh yeah, hang on a second. So, look, I take your point, Dave, about Rory, but Rory and with all respect, and I don't think this is in any way throwing slight on Shane. Rory and Shane are two very, very different golfers. Rory is one of the best Like he is Hall of Fame. Good. Yeah.
No, well, I'm just using it as an example of a guy who is experiencing several near misses and comes through.
Yeah.
Far lesser golfers than Rory have done the same.
But like, so why, I mean, we want it to be true, but why is Shane more like Rory McIlroy than Martin Kaymer?
Well, I'm not saying he is. Well, we won't know.
No, and I realise that.
The next
that. We
time,
don't
Shane, we won't know until the next time he puts himself in a position to win.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, who knows, Shane's next win might be where he comes from six back on the final day and goes on the sort of putting streak that he did through the first 13 or 14 holes at the weekend, and he ends up winning by one or two. And that might, he may need to win in a different way. But going in as the front runner, as the favourite going into the final round of the tournament, and then having the lead in the tournament in his hands heading into the final three holes or four holes or whatever the case might be the next time, that's when we will see if what has happened this year has taken a long-term toll on him. Yeah. We won't know. We're just speculating and discussing it. Our job. But
And it is. And it's also as well, there's that really, I noticed this because I was thinking about it obviously over the last couple of days ahead of coming on to record with you guys, was, you know, that sense of like, and I've been guilty of it for sure. It's like that sense of going hard on somebody because you support them, they don't deliver the result you want them to deliver, so you're kind of mad at them without realizing, and you mitigate that annoyance in being overly critical or calling them chokers or saying anything like that. Whereas, like, I think that the sense for me is that obviously something happened, and it happens to golfers all over the world playing at every level. It just happened to happen to one of the elite level golfers at a key point. And, you can't just brush it off. That's my point. But
Nor should we. But yeah. I just think it's like, as Dave alluded to a couple of weeks ago, like, it's more often than not, the golf week in, week out is so banal, and there's no backstory, and the commentary, half the time, they're just cheerleading. And when you're sat on your couch on your Sunday night and you got a chance to witness an Irish guy winning, you know, on the PGA Tour, it's a different thing. It's cool.
Absolutely.
You know, and you're just totally cheering for him. And then it's bloody equally heartbreaking when it finished the way it did. So, you know, even hopefully no different for Seamus. Like, I was so excited to see Seamus Power do so well.
Did well, didn't he? Yep.
He did, and he had a bad Saturday. And you're like, oh man, if he can just get up there. And so we're essentially golf fans, and it's just better when your guy
does well. Absolutely. Yeah. No doubt.
It, you know, it's a seldom thing. Like, even McIlroy in his career, he's only really won, you know, once or twice a year, which is a crazy stat. But, you know, we only get the odds Sunday night to witness it.
Yeah, it's true.
Just with that tournament and Lowry's history there, it's one that he dearly wanted to win, you know, more so than wherever the next one might be, but that's why it was upsetting.
And again, it is, absolutely. And then the other thing, Dave, is that, like, conversely, had he not put one in water on 16 and 17 and won, you know, maybe by three, maybe by four, who knows, the talking points would have touched on, A, how amazing it is to see an Irish guy win. Oh, brilliant. What did he do? What did he do right? Also then he goes, yeah, but it must be said, it was against a pretty weak field. There was no, like, he was the second highest ranked player in the world or in the field, blah, 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 blah. So there's almost like the talking points would have taken on a kind of like, how can we put this win into context? And in so doing, almost take away from like how wonderful it would have been to see him actually do it.
I'm not sure we would have done that. We would have contextualized the win in that we would have said, yes, this is not a signature event, but it's a victory for Shane Lowry, who has not won in the States since, do you have to go all the way back to the WGC for the last time we won an individual event on US soil?
Yeah.
Obviously what happened in Dubai, it would have been enormous for him regardless. Yes, we would have said, okay, does this mean he's going to contend now at the Players' Championship in a couple of weeks at Sawgrass? Is he going to go to Augusta as one of the favourites? Just because he won here? Absolutely not. But it's brilliant for him to get that winning feeling once again, and you would hope that he can build on it for the rest of the season. So Look,
okay,
we may have qualified it, but I certainly don't think we would have done anything that would have resembled us taking some of the credit away for him winning.
No, I was being slightly facetious. But it is worth, the other one to point out is Jacob Bridgman lost a lead the week before and then won the week after. So Shane's playing well. So, Gary, it goes back. I've come round now to your way of thinking a bit more. It's that sense of, is to sit down after he's, you know, had a few beers, told Wendy how pissed off he is, you know, held his, what's it, that ginger head on his daughter? What did he, it was very cute. Held her in his arms a little bit and then kind of sat down with whatever and just said, right, okay, let's take the good stuff and try and focus on that and go into next week feeling fairly kind of, not maybe not confident is the wrong word, but buoyed by.
It's like the hardest thing, Fionn, when you're playing a 25, 30 week schedule is to turn up on a Monday night or a Tuesday morning and be energized for the week ahead. Yeah. You know, there's so many weeks where it's so easy to get flat. Obviously, this week is a big week. That takes care of itself. But he has to try energize himself for Thursday morning and,
there you go,
and get back on the horse and go again.
All right.
And look, it's a good thing that he doesn't have far to go.
No.
You know, if he had to go across the country and go through all that travel and on the back of what happened at the weekend, that might be pretty hard. But he probably got to sleep in his own bed on Sunday night and again Monday night, and he's probably heading to Bay Hill today. And he won't have far to travel. I think that's a bonus for him as well. He'll get that really big tournament feel when he gets there. Also, it's a signature event. The best players in the world are going to be there, apart from the LIV guys, obviously. And he will hopefully be in a position where mentally he can shrug off last weekend pretty quick.
And, and he'll get a good TV draw, so that will help too.
Good. All right, okay, so we're all buoyed and hopeful and, you know, and look, Jesus, how amazing would it be if next Tuesday we sit down and go, I told you he would win. listen, my thanks to Gary and Dave, as always. We're going to leave it there. The Ryan Lyons coming at you on Thursday. Again, if you have questions for Shane, get them into the Discord channel, or you can email them to golfweekly@offtheball.com. Cheers, lads. On what is, like, let's just go, what is a very disappointing week for poor old Shane Lowry. Here's hoping for better things at Bay Hill. Thanks, lads.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.